With Lanark County Interval House Executive Director Aaron Lee here on MyFM. Lanark leads today.ca. Aaron, good to talk with you.
It's always good to talk with you, Bob.
Also wanted to point out that you are a member of Ontario's Domestic Violence Death Review Committee, so you're certainly bringing a wealth of knowledge to the table as we tackle this particular topic. Our listeners are very familiar with you and the work that you do. So we'll get right into it. Yesterday, of course, the five former hockey players were acquitted in the Hockey Canada sexual assault trial. I have to ask you, point blank, was justice served?
My point blank response is no, justice was not served.
Can you explain to us why you feel that way? I know it's an obvious question, but it certainly is one that we should ask and we should hear. I'm sure there's a lot of people out there who aren't necessarily confused or questioning, but they're just trying to determine, why the judge would rule like this when obviously there was something that was going on there that wasn't right.
Yeah, I think there are lots of big feelings that are enumerating all over the province and all over Canada as a result of this response, given the significance and the media coverage of this case. I don't think that many advocates are surprised. I think that we're disappointed. I think that we have been talking about the solutions for years. I think the criminal justice system doesn't serve victims of sexual violence well. I think that we see over and over again a lack of analysis related to being trauma-informed. I think that old myths and stereotypes about sexual violence and victims of sexual violence continue to surface and continue to be seen as relevant and viable. And I think ultimately it silences victims. The fear just augments. The victim blaming and re-victimization is something that victims continue to struggle with day after day. And in this particular case, in 2018, when the case was being reopened and the police were pursuing criminal charges, I think it's safe to say that EM said that she was overwhelmed by that notion and that idea. And I think that victims ultimately find their courage and are brave and come forward only to be disappointed by a system that doesn't hold perpetrators accountable.
And one thing that I really found interesting over the course of the trial and in what the judge said yesterday, when she was referring to inconsistencies in the testimony, we're looking at over a week of testimony for this victim and several different lawyers questioning her. She's reliving a moment over and over again. There's bound to be, some discrepancies there as you talk about it over and over again. Is this not an indication that if you have a situation like this with multiple lawyers and so on, that to ensure that the victim is protected, that maybe, you just line it up for maybe a couple of days, sort of a group effort to cross-examine that person?
Yeah, I think there are many solutions. I think that one of the major solutions would be to ensure that an expert witness is called to testify to help contextualize and understand the trauma associated with that kind of experience and the reality around inconsistencies. I think that if someone was to ask you to recall what happened in your day and it was a particularly stressful day, you would have some inconsistencies or things that you forgot or things that your body responded to and blocked. I think in a situation like this, when we diminish the capacity or the value of a victim's testimony because we draw on inconsistencies. We fail to understand the level of fear that happens in the cycle of violence. We fail to understand that. What evidence and proof are you looking for? There was a perpetrator and a victim behind locked doors. What are we looking for in terms of her proof of what happened? Fear will do lots of things for people in terms of silencing them. You know, this notion of fighting back, this notion of yelling, this notion of being really clear with the no statements. I think it's really important to understand the cycle. And I feel like if there was an expert witness who could contextualize that, and ultimately education as well in terms of members of our justice system, it's really important to understand that that's not how it works. It doesn't work that way. People cope with their fear in various ways. Not saying no doesn't mean you're saying yes. It's really important to recognize that as she's being asked over and over again to substantiate situations and moment by moment, there should be expected inconsistencies based on the fact that you are trying to recall every moment, every interaction. And when you are in a situation of trauma and you have to do your fight or flight or figure out how you're going to cope with that, there's going to be inconsistencies. There's no In my opinion, there was no analysis around the context of how that cycle works, how people d address their fear and cope with their fear in moments of high risk and stress. This could have resulted in her being further harmed. The violence could have escalated had she made alternate choices. When other men enter the scene, we're talking about a power dynamic that somebody has to think through very quickly. How am I going to respond to this to save myself? And I think that the trauma-informed approach lacking in this particular case, I think the messaging related to her not being a viable victim and her testimony was questioned. I think the myths and the overwhelming sense of, you know, her words weren't slurred. She seemed competent and coherent. Like you're not looking at the trauma-informed lens of how she was coping with that situation. And all of that just ends up back in a place where we recognize that this system is broken and it's not working. It's not working for victims of sexual violence. It's not working in investigations where people acknowledge I maybe should have followed up on that particular piece a little bit further. And now, you know, it's post-trial and here we are.
Moving forward, I know that this is something that we've talked about many times. The education component is huge when it comes to speaking to men, speaking to young men, as they're growing up so that they understand. I mean, you look at the act that they were investigating, that isn't taught in schools. Those situations, when people see those things on video, they're not getting it from an educational source. So when you talk about how people should be acting, how men should be acting, and young men and boys and teens, that education component is key. And I know that you are heavily involved with that.
Yeah, our agency has been really fortunate to work alongside other agencies like Leeds Grenville, led by Hamilton Interval House, on coaching boys into men. And this is a school-based, rooted program that originated in the United States. And I think it is really important that we're engaging with coaches and teachers and developing tools so that they can engage and coach boys into men And acknowledge vulnerabilities, acknowledge stereotypes, acknowledge healthy relationships and choices that can be made differently to empower our young men moving forward. I think that it's relevant to all athletic associations in terms of looking at, regardless of gender, to be talking about vulnerabilities and healthy relationships and the role that being an athlete plays in terms of, frankly, additional responsibility, especially when you are seen in the public eye, and how you need to take responsibility for that. And we are very happy to be looking forward in the fall to engaging with football coaches, to be also engaging with minor hockey. And currently, we're in discussions with the women's soccer club in Ottawa in terms of trying to continue to make sure that we're amplifying the reality of healthy relationships and the realities of choices and who is responsible for those choices, and looking at how do we change that landscape by engaging.
Now, last question for you, second last question, actually. But when you look at that, and that's a great local approach, but when you look at the result of yesterday, what do you see happening, say, at the provincial level and the national level? We have seen countless times when verdicts have come down or recommendations, either one way or another, that they often, well, they always have a tremendous ripple effect. So when you look at it from that sort of provincial lens, I'll ask you to put on your expert hat here. What do you see as next steps for organizations such as yours?
I think it's important to listen to groups like OCRCC, the Ontario Coalition of Rape Crisis Centres, and other groups that are coming forward, along with us, who are saying, it's past due. We need to be looking at a review of the system. We need to be looking at a review of the laws. We need to be looking at how restorative justice can play a role in sexual violence cases. We need to look at the responsibility of review committees on cases like this, so that we're looking at how do we modify approaches through our policing and across our judicial systems. We need to be funding agencies adequately. Sexual assault centers, community-based resource centers, shelters, and anti-violence agencies. We need to look at how to fund them better, because we are the people that are the often the first point of entry if we can get that woman if she finds her courage. It is important for agencies to think about what our relationships look like with our justice partners, and how we can ensure appropriate referrals are happening in a timely manner, whether that's to victim services. In our county, it could be victim services and then to the victim advocate program. We need to be thinking about how we continue to focus on victims at the center. It's not about people's power, and it's not about people's positions. It's about being trauma-informed and keeping victims at the center of the work we're doing. There is a national moratorium on restorative justice. We need to think about how that needs to change. We need to be working alongside our partner agencies and talking about what are some of the alternatives, because justice seeking through the formalized justice system has never proven to be the be-all and the end-all for victims of sexual violence. So we need to look at those alternatives, and we need to speak truth to power. We need to speak truth to our clients, to the strong, courageous folks who come forward and disclose. We need to speak that truth in terms of, as people weigh the choices and decisions, if you're a family member of somebody who expresses and shares an experience, connect them to a local community-based organization first and foremost, to get them the support that they need to be validated and believed and heard.
Erin Lee, thank you very much for this. Always very educational when we speak. An announcement coming up in a few weeks that will allow us to continue this conversation at lanarkleadstoday.ca. Our listeners certainly are very well acquainted with you and appreciate the insight that you bring every time we speak with you. So, Erin Lee, thank you so much.
Thank you. I appreciate you, listeners. If you are a victim or impacted, there are big feelings. Please call your local crisis line or your local sexual assault center and seek out some support. This is a very difficult time for all of us, and we need to lean in on each other and unite. And MyFM continues to lead the way in terms of always making space for important discussions like this. So thank you very much.
You're most welcome.